This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
The J Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. On this week's episode, Scott McIntyre joins me to review the rip-roaring end-to-end thriller that was the clash between the top two in Hiroshima on Friday night, and we round up the rest of the J1 Match Day 8 fixtures, including the latest shenanigans at Kobe and another mediocre weekend for the three Kansai clubs. The final J Talk Podcast of the Heisei era starts now. Scott McIntyre is back on J-Talk, and it's always a pleasure to have him on. Scott, how are you?
I'm very good, Mr. Benjamin Maxwell. How are you?
I'm terrific, thank you. It wasn't quite rip-roaring. It wasn't quite end-to-end, was it? But the top two did indeed square off in Hiroshima last Friday night. I got that part right, at least. And, for us, we're in uncharted territory as FC Tokyo supporters, as the Gasmen sit clear on top of the J1 table for the first time ever this late into a J1 season, Scott. And I realise it's not late in the season at all, but to be where they are after eight rounds is a first for the club. And once again, Diego Oliveira delivered.
Yes, and that was undoubtedly the highlight of the match, and I think he's been a very important part of the season so far. I was kind of sceptical initially when he came in on loan, and it looked like he'd enjoyed several Brazilian barbecues back in his homeland during that particular off-season, and it took him quite a while to shed the weight. He entered this season in not a totally dissimilar physical state, but he's clearly lost a lot of weight. He moves with a lot more freedom, and he has the courage to run at players. And you saw the end result of those kind of twin objectives in this game. I mean, really a game-changing, a game-winning goal, and that's precisely what you need from your big-name foreign signing. I'm still not totally sure he's the best option that Tokyo could have signed. Of course, there's been all these intensifying rumours around Ian Robin's potential arrival in the middle of this year. I'm not sure if that's, if he had a choice between Ian Robin arriving or maybe keeping Takefusa Kubo. I know which one most supporters would plumb for. But, he's done the business. He scored some key goals. And really, probably no more important than this in the top of the table clash, the decisive goal. I think I'm right in saying there was only four shots on target across the two teams in the entire match, which was, I suppose, in a way, what we expected of this match. But, I don't know if it's necessarily going to stamp the J-League as the world's most thrilling league, if this is the kind of top of the table clash that it produces. But it's effective, as we know, for Hiroshima. It's effective for Tokyo. And yeah, as you said, the end result is they sit top of the table now.
They do indeed. And I know you're a busy gentleman, Scott, but did you happen to catch last week's podcast? Because Tobias Dreiman and Sam Robson did a pretty damn good job of previewing this game. I mean, we could have seen it from a mile away. I mean, the way these two teams like to set up and like to play. But, I mean, right from the start of when I asked Tobias, if the listeners are curious, you can go back to last week's episode. It was around the 33-minute mark when we started to preview this game. And basically from the off, Tobias said he expected Diego Oliveira to make the difference and that Hiroshima would struggle against a defence as well organised as FC Tokyo. So obviously they had been a little bit more free-flowing than in the last season than a bit in the last couple of weeks coming into this game. But yes, they were unable to break Tokyo down. And as Tobias said, he thought Diego might be the difference. And it was a moment of magic in the 71st minute that won the game for Tokyo. So this panned out as a lot of people would have expected, but I mean, kudos to Tobias for absolutely nailing his prediction. But so does this change anything? It just seems that Tokyo have the wood over Hiroshima, Scott. I mean, Tokyo were the first team to beat Sanfrecce last season, of course, after they roared out of the gates winning 8 of their first 9. Tokyo beat them in match day 10. That was their first defeat of the season. And they've repeated the dose this season, as we've said, to go 3 points clear. But, I mean, it's not going to change anything for Hiroshima, is it? They're just going to carry on how they've been doing things in the last, as I said, season in a bit. And, well, it's been standing them in pretty decent stead so far this season. So I wouldn't expect Hiroshi Jofuku to overreact too much to this one result.
No, I don't think they're going to change the point. Although I do agree. I listen to the pod every week, Ben. You'll be pleased to know.
Yeah,
a little bit rough when he gets up towards a two-hour mark on occasion. But so let's try and keep things in brief here. But yeah, that was a fine summation, and I agree also with what Tobias was saying in terms of the fact that over the last week or two, maybe Hiroshima have somehow played a little bit. I don't know. Expressively is quite the right word, but with a little bit. Of kind of greater freedom and perhaps also as they posited the addition of some younger players into the squad has helped with that in a way. I'm still not sure, again, if Daiki Watari is the best forward going around. There's some fairly middling quality in there. But one thing, as we've said time and time again, that the Japanese coaches in particular, a lot of them in this league are very adept at doing is organising teams to be defensively well-structured, sound, hard to break down and efficient in transition and on the counter-attack. And both Hiroshima and FC Tokyo are fine examples of that. As you well know, that's not the way I prefer to see football played. And I think if you have a top-of-the-table clash where you've got one single shot on goal in the first 45 minutes and not many more thereafter, it says everything about the mentality of these two clubs and these two coaches. So I'd really like more teams and more coaches to be bold and brave in the way that they attack matches. But this is the load that we're carrying at the moment. As FC Tokyo supporters, we have a very efficient coach who is doing what he needs to do to eke out points, and he might even take that deep into the season towards some kind of a title push. But I'd love to see it being done with more flair. But it is what it is. And is Mr. Jofuku going to change his ways? No, I don't think he will. And then ultimately that's just going to lead to him being, sacked in May of one of these next three seasons without having won anything, because you can only take the conservative approach to so far down the line, and then you don't have the ability or the thoughts outside of the ones that you've trained into submission to be able to do anything different, and you can't just chug through a season with the same kind of efficient but somehow uninspiring approach to playing football and expect it to be successful. I don't think so. So, he could, maybe you could have them finishing fourth every year. He's like the inverse of Watanabe at Sendai. They're going to finish fourth and bottom every year, and he survives. This guy is going to get his teams finishing fourth every year and survive it. And eventually it'll come to 2024 and they'll realise, we might want to try something different.
Indeed. All right. Well, regular listeners like yourself, Scott, will know that we've dedicated large swathes at the beginning of the last two podcasts to discussing Hiroshima and FC Tokyo. So we'll wrap it up with just one more question about FC Tokyo, because, as I said, and I stand to be corrected, but I did a pretty thorough search through basically every J1 season that FC Tokyo have contested since the year 2000, Scott, and I'm confident in saying that Tokyo have never been top of J1 this late in a season. So is this going to be sustainable? They have a very strong defence so far. They have conceded just 5 goals through 8 games. Diego Oliveira's just scored for the 4th straight game. So he's in pretty decent form. We saw him drop off a lot in the second half of last season, but that was when the entire team really went to pot, didn't they? So is this going to be sustainable? Are Tokyo going to be able to hang up in and around the top 3 for the foreseeable future playing football like this, or is some of the bigger fish below them finally going to click into some sort of form, and they won't be able to hold off the charges of the bigger names, your Frontales, your Kashimas, etc.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they've done what they needed to do. As has been pointed out, of course, numerous times in the pod as well, that Tokyo need to bank these points because they've had a lot of home matches already with that Rugby World Cup Pallava are coming and interrupting things later in the season. So that's going to be a natural time, not just them, the other clubs that it's impacting as well, Nagoya, Yokohama and others. So, you know, maybe in a way it's not such a surprise to see all those teams that are being impacted by that, who have had more home games than the others up to this point, up near the top where you would have wanted them to be if they were to be title contenders. So they're doing what they need to do. I think it's also been pointed out that maybe there's not such great depth in the squad at Tokyo this year. I think, you know, we don't know yet. JL hasn't been around for too long. He hasn't had, outside of the cup games, any chance to start and show what he can do. But he certainly hasn't looked like the second coming of Neymar either. So if something was going to happen to Diego Oliveira injury-wise, then, you know, where is the depth in terms of the goals going to come from? And you could say the same, you know, if something happened to maybe one of the central midfielders and central defenders as well, it's pretty thin behind them. So, you know, a lot of it's going to come down to keeping the squad healthy, which is not going to happen throughout a long season, how they adjust to, you know, the different pace of the game and so on when summer comes around, and how they particularly, you know, cope around September and October when they have that slew of road matches is also going to be a key component. But, yeah, there's signs certainly that they're well structured defensively, and that's points you know, one and two in terms of the way that the coach wants to play, and then in terms of, you know, at least making sure that you're going to be up and around the top four or top six come season's end.
All right then. So Hiroshima hosting FC Tokyo was obviously the headline clash of the J1 match day, and it played last Friday night. We'll wrap up the other game that took place last Friday as well, Scott, and that was a Kanagawa derby with Kawasaki hosting Shonan. Interestingly enough, though, Kawasaki, of course, romped to their second straight J1 title last season. They were unable to beat Belmare in either of their league meetings. They were both drawn last year, and Frontale came in to this one yet to win at home this season, having drawn three times and lost very late on to Gumba Osaka as well. But they put this one to bed before half time, Scott, and two terrific goals. Hiroyuki Abe with a tremendous volley from inside the D in the 21st minute, and then Kei Chinen let Tatsuki Nara's through ball from basically the halfway line run across his body, and he basically it got to almost the edge of the 6-yard box before he stroked it past Yota Akimoto. So a couple of very good goals for Frontale. Are there broader signs that they're springing into life, or are they still very much a work in progress as they ultimately go about chasing a third straight J1 title?
Well, it's going to be difficult because this is, as far as we can tell, the first year where they've really put a lot of emphasis in the ACL and been really unfortunate as well to have not, you know, taken more than they did in trips to both China, particularly Korea, where they copped that stoppage time, a goal in a 1-0 loss to Ulsan a couple of weeks ago. But it was always going to be a balance with that. Then they've had a lot of injury concerns, Taniguchi going down in that ACL match, you know, missing the last couple of league games as a result. Morita, who, man, geez, he seems to be made of glass. So he means in and out of the team consistently. When he's in, Oshima seems to be out. Kurumaya's have been injured. And then you've got this rather strange situation. I just wonder if there's not something going on behind the scenes with why the Brazilian, Leandro Damião, is not playing. I mean, he was, you know, very, very impressive in the Super Cup at the start of the season and, you know, looked good in the early couple of chances he had. And then he seems to have, you know, not just missing out, but almost being frozen. I mean, he's not starting. Kei Chinen's starting up front, and often he's not even coming off the bench. So I'm just not sure. And he's on a very healthy amount of money. So I just wonder if there's something, you know, behind the scenes we're not quite fully aware of what's going on there. But I think the key thing for me as well is that they played their best this season when Kengo Nakamura has been available, which he hasn't been for quite a few matches, both in the ACL and in the league. And what that has resulted in when he's not present is they've tended to play 4-4-2. So they look, for me, a completely different team in that structure. And they don't often play it. As a matter of fact, if Kengo plays, it's a 4-2-3-1 pretty much always. And if he doesn't play, it's pretty much always a 4-4-2, where you're playing a totally different style of football, a lot more lofted balls from the back, a lot more crosses from deep, and maybe that's also a factor why Chinen's maybe a more mobile player than Leandro Damião has been playing. But yeah, when they play the 4-2-3-1 that they've played pretty much forever, when Kengo has been there and he's pulling the strings in that kind of number 10 role, they look to me a completely different team. So I think again, a lot of it's going to come down to how healthy they can keep him, and it might be, who knows, his final season in Japanese football, and he might need to be eased through some of these matches where you're playing ACL midweek and all the league matches, and particularly as summer arrives as well. But yeah, when they're on song, I think it tends to be when they are in the 4-2-3-1 and when he's there in that number 10 role orchestrating things. And I think if they can get that right more often than not, then even we say it's been an inconsistent start to the season already, but they're sitting up in seventh and they're only a couple of wins off top. So if they're doing that while playing a fairly sketchy kind of inconsistent football with key players missing, I still think that they're the team to beat.
Yes, indeed. As you say, yeah, just 3 points off the ACL spots after 8 games. Despite they've still only lost that one time at home to Gumba. But yes, they've probably drawn more than they would have expected to in the early going. You mentioned that, Chinen is keeping Leandro Damião out of the starting 11. Well, amongst other things, as you say, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes at Kawasaki. But Chinen has matched Diego Oliveira by scoring for the fourth straight game here. And a neat finish, as I mentioned. And Hiroki Abe, a terrific finish to get them on their way early doors. They're both of the games from last Friday.
Whether you're a land developer, in local government, or a service authority, Lenko Group will help you get your job done on time and in a cost-effective manner. Lenko Group provides superior civil engineering and advisory services by creating, communicating and delivering sustainable, efficient solutions. For all your infrastructure requirements associated with residential, commercial or industrial development projects, visit our website lenkogroup.com.au or give us a call today on 1300 152 626.
Let's move on to Saturday, where 1-0 at home was very much the scoreline du jour. There were indeed 5-1-0 home wins on Saturday, and we'll start with the team that rose back up to third in the table, Scott. Nagoya took advantage of Oita drawing away at Gumba Osaka, which we'll come on to in a little bit, of course. They took on the Iwata at home, Grampus, and you can tell me, but it looked from the highlights that they made a pretty hard work of this, and in the end were somewhat fortunate. A bit of a theme of a lot of these goals in these 1-0 wins were some pretty ordinary defending. And, Joe benefited from, cock-ups here, there and everywhere, basically. But Takuma Ominami missing what appeared a pretty straightforward clearance, so the ball bouncing straight up in the air in the box, and Joe heading the bouncing ball over the keeper, Kaminsky. But, a 3 points very well taken by Nagoya at the end of the day. They they kept pace they gained ground obviously on Hiroshima, but they kept pace with FC Tokyo, and probably not their best day at the office, but at the end of the day it's just 3 points and they move on to the next game.
Yeah, precisely. And I mean, there was a match of no great highlights either outside of the the rather unusual moment where our friend from Luxembourg, Gerson Rodriguez, kicked out. He missed a real gilt edge chance. I think it was in stoppage time, right at the end of this match, pushing a header from very close range onto the bar of the goal, and he's gone over and he's given it a fair old boot. probably great risk of breaking his foot in doing so, and he's picked up a second yellow card and been sent off for his troubles as well. So he could have broken his foot and got himself a suspension all in the same little moment of madness. But that's why you're paying the big bucks for Joe to take advantage of those kind of scrappy situations. He's not going to get 50 goals probably this season, Ben, but I'll tell you what, he's a good shout to be the golden boot winner again. And this is the kind of performance from Nagoya. I think there's a mature kind of a showing that we've, certainly that would not have been a word that you would have used to describe them last year. But I think it can't be overstated just how big an impact this boy, Yash Schmidt, has had, the guy that came to them at the start of the season, the central midfield. He's been an absolutely fantastic player. For me, he's been the player of the season so far. And I, again, I'm not quite sure what's going on with Eduardo Neto, because I haven't seen him listed on any kind of injury reports, but he's just seemed to have disappeared off the face of the earth. I don't know if he has got a long-term concern, if he's there. He doesn't seem to be frozen out, because you'd think he'd be playing the cup games if that was the case. So, again, that's a very curious situation, what's happening with him. But it's really come up trumps for Nagoya, because they've unearthed a gem of a player. I mean, he screens things really well. He controls the flow of the game through midfield. He's a superb passer, great vision and in control. And he's the real link between, you know, what was a very sketchy defence and, you know, a couple of shrewd signings as well. So, Yoshida has come across from Tosu, was not the flashiest of players, but again, he's really helped to calm things down and stabilise that side. And, you know, saw Mateus come in as one of the big-name off-season signings. He hasn't been able to get fit and play consistently, but that's allowed someone like Izumi to play well. The young guy, Soma, who I said to you at the game, you know, I've never seen a guy who's such a fantastic little creative player, but I've never seen a guy who's smaller than the corner flag when he goes to take a kick. He's a very small guy. But, you know, he's come on. He's played, a bit at left-back. He's played on left-wing. He can play, you know, essentially he can play on the right. You've got creativity, but you've also got the control that Schmidt gives you. And then, of course, you've got the dynamic kind of playmaking abilities of Gabriel Javier, who did pick up a knock at the end of this game. And, you know, we've seen what's happened to Nagoya in the past when he's been out. So if you're a Gramps fan, you have to hope that he's right. And then, yeah, the fine finishing up front, and somehow a kind of an unexplainable late career resurgence as a born-again striker for Aria Josuru Asagawa, who's lapping up playing in and amongst all this quality and looking like a half-decent player himself. So, you know, it's credit to Kazama, I think, to be able to evolve the team from being an all-out kind of gung-ho attacking team, which I don't personally mind. But he's added, a little bit of steel and control and class to them at a couple of key positions. And I think they're a real serious title contender.
All right, then. Mark that down, listeners. At 10:47 p.m. on Monday night, April the 22nd, Scott McIntyre just paid a compliment to Aria Josuru Hasegawa. There you go. An absolute collector's item there. And, you didn't mention our old favourite, Takuji Yonemoto, Scott. He's been an ever-present in the heart of the Nagoya midfield.
Yeah.
He's always been a toiler, hasn't he? And it's just good to see him getting a chance to play regularly after so many setbacks through knee injuries and the like. And obviously he wasn't a Kenta Hasegawa's a cup of tea. He couldn't guarantee him regular starts with his commitment to Yojiro Takahagi and Kento Hashimoto. So, Yonemoto's got a chance for a new start, and he appears to be taking that with both hands.
Yeah, absolutely, and he's a fine complement in a way to the, you know, perhaps more creative tendencies of Schmidt that he plays alongside of. So, you know, two key additions in central midfield. You've got the one at the back. Of course, Mitch Langrad wasn't playing due to concussion in this game as well. And then, you know, Izumi, who's been a player of promise but never really nailed down a start as well. And then Hasegawa up front. So you can say, you know, the team that ended last season, it's pretty much been rapidly overhauled. And I think a couple of layers up in terms of the cake of class, and they could be putting some icing on the top of it come December.
The cake of class. That's a new one. I like that. All right. Well, after the roaring success of Tobias and Sam previewing the Hiroshima FC Tokyo game on last week's podcast, Scott, I tell you what, I don't know if you've had a chance to glance at next week's fixture list, but there is a certain fixture taking place at the Toyota Stadium next Sunday, which is at third place Nagoya hosting second place Hiroshima. Do you want to have a stab at having a crack at thinking about how that might go? I mean, you're well and truly on record with your opinions on Hiroshima and the way they go about things, but do you think in their current incarnation they are well equipped to perhaps stifle Nagoya, and especially if Gabriel Xavier were to miss? And I guess that's a massive caveat when we're talking about this game coming up on the weekend, as we don't know if he'll be available or not. But how would you see a game like this panning out between obviously two teams at the sharp end of the table, but they do go about things in very, very contrasting fashions?
Well, you said there's a lot of things that can impact. We don't know if Mitch Langerak is going to be back from the concussion, and I think probably just as important, we don't know 100%, although we've got a lot of cues as to what Hiroshima are going to do in the Champions League this week. Of course, they're going to trip away to Korea, and we've seen what they've done in those past kind of trips, you know, sending the B team, although they did play a strong team at home and got the benefits of that, you know, in that kind of reverse tie against Daegu a couple of weeks ago. So if for some bizarre reason they send... you know, I don't know, a core group of kind of regulars across the Korea and then come back and play 3 days later against the Nagoya team that you assume is going to rest their entire setup for the Louvain Cup midweek, then that's going to be a huge swing in terms of things in favour of Nagoya. But either way, even the fact that the coach and, you know, the training staff and the support staff and whatnot have been off in Korea for, you know, half the week is going to have some kind of impact for sure in terms of the preparations of Hiroshima. And this is a really important clash for the way that I think football should be played, where you do have this proactive team at home. Of course, it's the start of the Golden Week holidays here in Japan to older clubs in terms of the J-League. You expect it's going to be a massive crowd for this this game as well, with everyone on holidays. You know, hopefully we get some more nice kind of spring weather, and it's all set up really for Nagoya to come out and really go at Hiroshima, which they're going to do anyway, regardless of the opponent. And then we see Hiroshima as we would expect to see Hiroshima away from home, sitting back, looking to remain compact, kind of striking what they can in transition. We don't know the situation. Also, Douglas Vieira has missed the last couple of games through injury, so that has kind of pressed Watari into this starting role. I'm not totally convinced, although he has scored some decent goals, that he's the kind of guy to take the chances that you need, because we know in any given game Hiroshima aren't going to create you know, more than probably three or four kind of clear-cut chances. So who are the players that can finish them? Is Shibasaki a clinical finisher? I'm not so sure he is. I'm not so sure that the Watari is, and I'm not so sure about some of the other options. And as has been said on the podcast many times, really, you know, it's the wide kind of players. Kashiro on the left, and this Emil Salomonsson has been very impressive on the right, who've been not only the creative spark, but in many ways they've also been sharing a bit of the scoring burden as well. So I just don't know if Hiroshima have the quality that they have, you know, to be able to finish the chances they create. And at home in this environment and playing the kind of form that they're in, we expect Nagoya are really going to go at them hard and early. And if Gabriel is fit, if Joe is on song and the other players are fit and capable, I think this is a match that Nagoya really should win. They're going to create sustained pressure. And as we've always seen, if you score first or if you score early against Hiroshima, they tend to really struggle to get into games. And these are the kind of teams that they really struggle against, the ones that place them under huge pressure. And, you know, even if for some reason they do manage to get something on the break or from a set piece or whatever inside the first half, you know, these teams are not going to let up and really come at them. So I think the real attack-minded, the teams of which there aren't many in the league, Kawasaki, Sapporo, Nagoya, Yokohama, and maybe perhaps Oita as well, I think they're the kind of teams that are going to cause Hiroshima more trouble than most. And I think, really, if all things are even, this is a match that Nagoya should win and should win by a couple of goals.
All right, then. Well, yeah, we shall see Sunday at the Toyota Stadium. As I mentioned, that'll be third hosting second. We might run through the rest of the games in the Matchday 9 slate later on, if I remember. But let's go on with some of the other games from Matchday 8. Scott, from Saturday, up at the Sapporo Dome, Consadole, who I had given a lot of stick to in recent podcast episodes. Of course, they did get back to winning ways last week by defeating Cerezo Osaka on the road. Well, they very much took care of Yokohama F. Marinos, who themselves came in a very patchy form with only one win in their previous five games. It was a huge away win, though, at Urawa in Matchday 6 that their supporters will have enjoyed, no doubt. But, yes, Sapporo got off to a lightning start, Scott. And, well, if there was any team that you would you might back to get back into a game like this after they were 2-0 down, it probably would be F. Marinos. But they had no answer on the afternoon, and Sapporo ended up running out 3-0 victors.
Yes, and it's probably no surprise that this coincided with the return to the starting team of Hiroki Ikura, who I think was certainly partly at fault for the first goal, and you know, perhaps even a couple of other moments that really opened up chances for Sapporo throughout this game. So if you say, okay, you're missing, not only are you missing you're probably your best keeper, you're forced to play a guy like this in goal, and then you're missing Eddie Garra Jr. Up front as well, which led to a kind of reshuffle situation in midfield. Was always going to be a difficult task for Marinos, and we know, okay, Sapporo are a good team at home, but they took their goals well. And I think after the match, Postecoglou said, you know, they had the quality in certain areas to hurt them, and that's what they did. They've got some very good players. I mean, Chanatip is a fine player, Anderson Lopez is a fine player, and Masashi Suzuki's been very, very good this season, and an absolutely superb free kick from a guy in Fukumori, you know, in my opinion, with Nakamura not really playing anymore. For Jubilo, was probably the best set-piece specialist anywhere in this league, and, you know, quite a few places beyond. He's an absolute, you know, deadly presence from those kind of situations, and he capitalised to, you know, make it 2-0 after, you know, I think barely 10 minutes. And then, you know, as much as Marinos tried to find a way back into it, they just couldn't do so. And yeah, okay, you've got to say fair credit to Sapporo. I don't think Marinos have been playing poorly, though. I mean, they still play with the same intensity, the same belief to do things correctly, to play football, to try and to try and win the game, which is, as I keep saying time and time again, it's the aim of the game. I know a lot of people, you know, have been mistaken into thinking that you know, it's a business and it's all about winning and all this kind of stuff, but it's a sport, and it's, you know, played to defeat your opponent, in my opinion, in an entertaining manner. So I'd have no qualms, you know, in terms of support generally tending to be a team that do that. But the good thing about Marinos is we know that it's not going to change. You know, even if, okay, a couple of spots, they're slipping down the ladder, they're still going to play the same way with the same belief. And results, yeah, will surely come from that.
All right, well, yeah, you mentioned Edgar Junior being missing, but that's hardly a recent development, isn't it? He's been out for the last three or four games, and Marcos Junior had filled in the goal-scoring role quite successfully in the previous couple of rounds, but on this occasion, just nothing clicked going forward for Yokohama. Did they have periods of sustained pressure on Gu Sung-yoon's goal, or was it just one of those afternoons where after being shell-shocked in the first 10 minutes, going a 2-0 down, and indeed 3-0 down inside the first half hour, that their belief might have been sapped a little, and they, well, not that they downed tools, but they just simply couldn't find a way through, and it just wasn't their day?
Yeah, well, it's often the case with Marinos. I mean, they create, you know, waves of pressure, loads and loads of chances, but they've had a lot of trouble finishing them, and that's why that front three is so important. So it's not the fact in isolation that Edgar Junior is missing, but it's what it's done to the balance of the rest of the team, which I don't think has been solved effectively, because with Marcos Junior playing as the left winger, he's been an unbelievable presence for them. I mean, creative and can finish as well, as we've seen when he shifts centrally. But then what do you do with the wide player on the left? So they tried Young Keter Endor the week before. That didn't really work. They pushed a combination of Koji Miyoshi and Amano out to those wider positions in this match, and that didn't work particularly effectively either, and has then dulled the threat of you know, of those kind of players who work far better in central areas by pushing them into wider roles. So I think it just unsettles the whole balance of the team, the fact that he's not there. Of course, they also missing any other kind of option. Shoito moved to Kashima in the off-season, and Tadanari Lee, who came across from Ural, has been injured pretty much the whole kind of season. So it's forced you know, this young kid, Yamaya, from the youth team into action in the cup matches up front. So they don't really have a recognised striker at the moment, which is a huge problem. So I think it's no question that that Marcos can play in those roles, but it's you're in doing that, you're reshuffling two or three kind of positions, and I think upsetting a lot of you know, rhythm that had been built up throughout pre-season. So I'm sure as soon as Eddie Garra is right to come back, which will hopefully be within the next week or two, that they should slip back into being the kind of really impressive force that they were over the first month or so.
All right, then. Well, yes, so Sapporo actually moved above Yokohama in the table after this victory. Consadole zipped up from 11th to 8th, while Yokohama slid from 5th down to 9th as the four teams four of the teams below them won in match day eight. So, yeah, we'll come on to a couple of the others later, as I said. But let's finish off this part one, Scott, by talking about, well, in reverse, the two teams that currently sit at the bottom of the J1 table. They were also on the end of 1-0 defeats in match day eight. Kashima defeated Vegalta. Sendai Antlers moved up to fifth, while Sendai stayed 17th. And Matsumoto claimed an important 1-0 home win over bottom club Tosu. That saw Yamaga move up two spots to 10th in the table. So, yeah, just one of those weird match days, Scott, where the in so many games, just a single goal was all that was required. Up at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, Tomoya Inukai bounced back after his battering that he took at the hands of Diego Oliveira in FC Tokyo's win in match day seven. Inukai headed in Ryota Nagaki's corner in the 66th minute, and that was enough for Antlers to take all 3 points at home. While at Matsumoto, Yamaga also made a fast start, as we've just mentioned, Sapporo did against Yokohama. The tireless Daizen Maeda didn't give up on a lost cause, held off a defender before lashing over Takuo Okubo in just the 10th minute. So, yeah, obviously Antlers are just going to chug along, Scott. There's not really much to see here. We pretty much know what to expect from them. And the fact that they bounce back from their battering at the hands of FC Tokyo won't have surprised many. I guess the other three teams involved in these two games are probably more worthy of discussion, as Sendai and Tosu have looked pretty clueless at times, and they both sit on 4 points at the foot of the table. While the Matsumoto, another important 3 points for them. I realise I've asked you about three teams at once there, but yeah, how should we tackle it? Let's go good news first. So Matsumoto, this is an important win for them as they look to consolidate back up in J1.
Yeah, but I ask you why they need to look to consolidate back up in J1.
Because the first time they were up, they went straight back down, and they don't want to suffer the same fate. Any sort of points they can get, they're absolutely grateful for at this time of the season. And to beat the bottom club, as scrappy as it was, they will absolutely take that every day of the week.
And so I ask you the same question on Oita.
Well, I mean, they're flying, yeah.
Yeah, but by your same argument, they should also be looking to come in and consolidate.
Well, I mean, again, yeah. Do you honestly think that they're thinking about finishing in the ACL spots at the moment, Oita?
I think if I'm in Oita's position, I would be thinking of winning the title.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and their squad's rubbish. I mean, their squad is worse than Matsumoto's, in my opinion, in terms of the individual quality that you have. But what you have is the difference in mentality. And this is what I talk about time and time again, where we come in, and which is why I'm so happy that somehow this Kato Nasaka's not come out of nowhere. But what he's done is he said that we're going to come and we're going to play. I mean, we're going to play our way. He's had the same time at the club, actually probably less than Sorimachi has had at Matsumoto. So this is a really a fascinating case. Of course, Japanese football is not immune to having teams coming up from J2 and then going all the way to win the title. I mean, it's happened on a couple of occasions, but they were with so-called bigger clubs. But what I think it's a question of mentality. We talk about it so often in J2, you know, why it's so difficult for teams to get out. It's often, let's say, most of the time, maybe an issue of coaching. And what's happened with Oita is, you know, they've played this kind of way in J3, they've played this kind of way in J2, and they've come up and said, we're going to play this way in J1. And where are they now? They're fourth or something on the table, right? And that's absolutely by no accident. They've played aggressively and played with positive intent, whether home or away. And really, they have absolutely no business in doing so whatsoever, because they have a squad of very, very modest means. There was a list circulating today that I saw the salaries of the various coaches in the league, and Kato Nasaka's earning like one-fifth of what, you know, the bulk of guys up at the top of the league are earning. And, of course, it's his very first time in J1. So if there was ever a case of a club coming in and trying to do what they should to consolidate and get points and scrap and be difficult to beat and all this kind of stuff, it should be Oita. But they've shown what can happen in this league when you can come and stand up and really play positively and say, you know, we're not going to react to what other teams do. We're going to come out and make them react to us. And I think, I know we're not talking about Oita, it's going to come later, but they've been such a revelation. And in this league where there's no, I don't think certainly at this early point in the season, we can say that either Hiroshima or Tokyo or, you know, most of the clubs up near the top, with perhaps the exception of Nagoya, have been swashbuckling their way through and, you know, are on some kind of unstoppable path to Japanese football dominance. I think there's absolutely no reason. With Oita, you've got to remember, because they've already come and taken points off Kashima on the road and various other big teams as well. So there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't be thinking of winning the league, in my opinion. I mean, if they get to a point, you know, where they're in this kind of positive position midway through the year, you know, they've got to then good cause to go back to the owners and you know, the management types and the board and say, you know, give us two or three kind of players that can really, you know, give us even better the quality. And there's absolutely no reason why they kind of, I was kind of stunned because I didn't watch them too closely in J2 last year, and I'm disappointed that that Sean and all these other people that were supposed to be watching them every week didn't tell me how good they were either, because apparently they were playing, you know, this way consistently down in J2 as well, and they've just come up and done exactly the same thing here in J1. And yeah, in this league where there's so much you know, nervous and kind of conservative coaching going on, that there's absolutely no reason I don't think that they can't win the league if they, you know, if they keep going on their merry way. That's a big call, I know, but if I was in their shoes, the players and the coach, that would absolutely, there's that nothing to scare them in the league, and they've shown that in most of those matches. So wheeling all the way back around to Matsumoto, that's why I'm so disappointed with what they're doing, because, you know, they've got wonderful you know, backing, whether at home or away. They've you know, got some big investment they've made in Leandro Pereira and a couple of these other players that have come across, and they've got, you know, at least decent quality, maybe better than, you know, even a, say a Jubilo or a Sendai in many of the positions on the pitch as well. So I don't think they should be, you know, scrapping and fighting for points, but, you know, this is the way they are. This is the way that Sorimachi is. It looks like he's, you know, an economics professor trying to explain some kind of hypothetical problem involving trigonometry after every game. And it's just not the way I think they should be approaching things, but okay, sure. They've picked up a few points, but all that's going to do is, you know, maybe give them a bit of breathing space, but I still think, by contrast, I think they're still one of the real contenders to go back down, because they just haven't shown that, you know, for me, creativity or adventure to really kind of go after matches and make sure that they win them. This was a wounded Tosu side that they didn't blow off the park, you know, either. And also featured that I don't know if you watched this game, if you saw it on the highlights. It's a very unusual moment that I don't recall seeing in Japanese football either, when this defensive midfielder Maeda came on at some point midway through the second half, and there was all this confusion. The referee is issued him a yellow card kind of straight away, and the commentators don't know what's going on, and then they've gone back and watched the tape, and he's come on before they'd held up, you know, the board, the electronic board with the numbers. He's like come on 3 seconds before the board, and he's booked it. For not only, he said he can come on the pitch, but he said he haven't come. So it was a whole mess of a situation. But that's my thoughts on Matsumoto. And Tosu, I'm kind of surprised that there hasn't been a coaching move there. You would have thought that maybe Mr. Carreras is going to be in some kind of serious trouble, particularly after, you know, the swift way that Corbe moved. And yeah, I'd be kind of really surprised if Tosu lost the next one or two games or didn't win one of those kind of coming matches, if he wasn't probably shown the door as well. You know, it's back to this whole situation with Torres. When he's playing now, he's kind of sulking about the pitch. You remember what he was like when he was falling out last year with our Italian friend, and he just he looked like he wanted to be anywhere else than playing football at this kind of club. He gave off that kind of vibe and aura, as far as I read it, this weekend as well. So, you just wonder what's going on behind the scenes. So I said to you early on when I was on the pod, you know, this guy Matsuoka, who's discovered and said, yeah, he should be in the Japan squad in March or whatever. So he's obviously got massive raps on this guy. He seems like a player of the promise, but I don't know if he's quite at the point of his development of being the regular starter that he is at the moment, the foreign guys, I mean, the defender, Galovic was, this was kind of a comic moment, right? He was kind of almost tripping over his feet. Who knows what's going on with communication with the goalkeeper, allowed Maida to kind of duck in behind him and between him and the keeper and score that goal. If it wasn't for that one moment, you know, maybe this could have been a different game as well. So there's been a lot of chopping and changing defensively, both in terms of the system that they play. They've played three at the back on occasion. They played four at the back on occasion. They played players in multiple kind of positions. For me, playing players out of position, the young guy Haru, who came across from Niigata, I think it's more of a defensive midfielder, has been pressed into the action at right back. Okay, they've had a little bit of issues with injuries and everything else, but there's just something not right at the club. And of course, all this is in the mix of the fact that they've been, you know, had their DNA established in one way for such a long time under various previous coaches, and this guy's come in with a different mentality and obviously a mandate, which is why it is going to be fascinating to see how much time the club gives him, because you would expect that there was going to be, you know, periods of transition and heartache in trying to cast off the, you know, the way that they have been set in for such a long period of time. And you can see that he's got generally the idea is there and the philosophy is there, but the execution and implementation of it isn't at this point. You would have thought, okay, with the preseason and now, you know, eight league matches plus three cup games, that's 10, 11 games into the new season, that maybe it should have been a little bit more advanced than it is. I wouldn't mind to see him, you know, being given at least through till the middle of the year to see if he can turn around, because he has players of decent quality, and from what I see, he has the right idea about the game. So, yeah, let's see if he can't turn around, and then, you know, midway through the season, you could maybe bring someone in to kind of rescue your survival if that was your intent. But, I mean, if you've brought this guy in looking for a revolution in the way that you play football, then you probably need to stick with him for a bit longer. But, you know, remember the J-League never used to be like this, really, sacking coaches so early in the season. But the last 3-4 years in particular, maybe since the DAZN money's come in and there's a lot more on the line, clubs have been a lot, you know, quicker to kind of push the button and move coaches on. So with Corbett doing it, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if there weren't another couple that followed, you know, really in the next few weeks as well.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I do believe that this was the first time that the Toso manager was able to start Fernando Torres, Mu Kanazaki and Isaac Cuenca together. Mm. So I'm not sure whether you saw any seeds of possible bearing fruit later on in the season as those three kind of click. But as you say, if Torres is going to sulk around the pitch, then they're probably not going anywhere, are they? And I mean, yeah, one goal through eight games is, well, that's got to be the lowest tally that any club's ever scored in J1, and I haven't gone back to research that, but it's either the worst or the second worst, because either one team scored none or one, so they've either tied the record or they've set it themselves. And, I mean, yeah, they just look completely at sea, and just the one win to show for their exertions so far. But Sendai are obviously in exactly the same boat. They have just one win, one draw and six losses from eight games. I mean, they've scored a few more goals, but they were obviously unable to get anything past Kashima, who were far more stable at the back than they were the previous week away at Tokyo. And Sendai, are they in for another long season as well?
Yeah, well, this is going to come down, I think, to the what they do. When we say, you know, the managers could change, I really think that it's come time, hasn't it, that Watanabe has shown that he doesn't have the capabilities. It's a squad of modest talent, admittedly, but I just think he's had a really, you know, long enough to have been able to do more than he has, or perhaps, you know, for the club to look and think if they can't find someone else who could perhaps turn their fortunes around. And again, the example that Oito is setting is one for all of these kind of struggling clubs at the bottom, you know, that they've got a guy in who's built the club steadily and built them with a very positive, proactive philosophy. I actually thought Sendai were a little bit, to their credit, a little bit more open in this game than they have been in most of the league games. And the thing about Sendai is you watch them in the cup when there's nothing really at stake in these early kind of group stage matches in the Levain Cup, and actually play some very, very good football. I mean, I've said it to you before, you know, he lets the handbrake go a little bit, and he allows them to go out and attack and try and push forward and really set the tempo of matches. But for some reason, he's just so conservative in the league and so so scared. I don't know what it is. So if I think this, yeah, a lot of people have said it. You said it pre-season. I think if they don't make the change at the right at the right point, I think this could be the year that they go down. There's a lot of other contenders for those kind of three or two plus one kind of drop positions, but Sendai are going to be right well and truly in the mix. I mean, you know, we talked about in the preseason bringing this bizarre signing in of this guy from Mozambique who hadn't played football for 6 months, brought him off the street, then didn't play him, then played him, and now he's not playing him, and he's playing this defender here, he's playing this guy here, he's playing this forward here. He's played so much constant change and confusion, but always coming with generally the same really conservative mentality. I can't see them really doing anything, and that surely they're a club that's prime to get, you know, a more progressive, really positive, attack-minded coach in and really try and see if they can't, you know, shake things up over the second half of the season. Because if they keep doing what they're doing now, I think they're just going to sink into the really serious trouble.
Whether you're a land developer, in local government, or a service authority, Lenko Group will help you get your job done on time and in a cost-effective manner. Lenko Group provides superior civil engineering and advisory services by creating, communicating and delivering sustainable, efficient solutions. For all your infrastructure requirements associated with residential, commercial or industrial development projects, visit our website lenkogroup.com.au or give us a call today on 1300 152 626.
Right, well, there's three games left to review from the J1 Match Day 8 slate, Scott, and they all involve the three clubs from Kansai. It was not a particularly fruitful match day for them. At the Saitama Stadium, Kobe, under new management, lost 1-0 away at Reds. An early goal there as well from Shinzo Kuroki, who was fouled and converted from the penalty spot. Yes, plenty to say about the situation at Kobe. Gunma Osaka drew 1-1 at home against Oita, who we've already talked about at length. Trinita looking in excellent form early doors. And Cerezo Osaka went to Nihon Daira and lost 1-0 to Shimizu. So let's cover those results in the order that I've just mentioned them, Scott. Late last week, there was a managerial change yet again at Vissel Kobe. Takayuki Yoshida returned to the hot seat after Juan Manuel Ligio was removed from the post after the 4-2 home loss at the hands of Hiroshima. But unfortunately for Yoshida, his return did not spark the team to victory. And all it took for Reds was that early Kuroki penalty.
Yeah, well, this is a very unusual situation, isn't it? Probably only in Japan, you know, the guy that you've sacked last year to replace with a foreigner, then you sack the foreigner and replace him with a guy that you moved him on for. It's a very bizarre situation all round. I mean, this was spun by the club. Certainly that it was a mutual parting of the ways. And, you know, there were quotes from Visual on the website that, you know, he had to move for family reasons or something or other. But I think everyone can pretty much figure out what was going on. And in many ways, this match was really a continuation of the troubles that they had. He made a few kind of interesting changes, bringing Mihara into the defence. But the real key thing for me with this whole situation with Kobe is, and it almost stems entirely from the goalkeeping situation. So with this obsession of bringing in these you know, big name outfield kind of foreign players, and they're, I think I'm right in saying, the only J1 club that are actually over the quota limit, of course, which you can sign in I believe an unlimited number of foreign. You have 38 of them if you want, but you can only play the five of them in the game. So the one that has missed out has been the goalkeeper Kim, who's still good enough to get into the Korean national team. And, you know, they showed faith with a younger Maekawa, who looked like he had some kind of potential last year, but he looks completely frozen in the spotlight this year. And, you know, one small mistake has led to another, to another, to another. And he's been an absolute liability for the team. I know a lot of emphasis has been placed on Danko, who is prone to a mistake, and he was certainly prone to one here and conceding the penalty as well. But I've actually been fairly impressed with him. I know that you've had a few guests on that have and not shared that opinion. He has had a few kind of calamitous moments one on one, but I think if you look at the work he does off the ball, generally his positioning is very good defensively. He does a lot of organisational work in trying to keep the shape and setting aside, although it is not such an easy thing to do, the individual mistakes that he's made, I think he's made them a far better team and generally a far more composed team in terms of the organisation at the defence. But for me, the real issue has been the absolute calamitous form that Maekawa has been in. And I think the match before that led to the thing. I know, again, a lot of the fault was placed on Duncan, but for me, most of those goals were the fault of Maekawa. And so something had to change there. But if you want to start him, then what you can do, some of the other foreigners are going to miss out, right? And you're not going to tell, Podolski or Iniesta or someone to get on the bench. We don't know what happened with Iniesta in this match. You know, there's all these kind of reports are going around that he was rested because of fatigue. It was a little bit of a strange one because they'd sold out or close to it Saitama on the back of, Iniesta being there. And this is the second time this has happened when he's, kind of mysteriously withdrawn on the morning of the match, because David Villa was missing for this game as well. But bringing Kim back in goal, they look a far better team. So how are you going to solve this kind of dilemma, I think, is going to be one of the real key kind of issues that are going on. We don't know what's happening, in the middle of the year. Podolski might be coming or going. There's all this kind of talk that he was going to be stripped of the captaincy for some other reasons that we don't know. So there's a lot of things, obviously, going on behind the scenes. I'm not sure if Sergi Samper has settled in as he would have liked either. So there's all this, kind of mass confusion going in. You brought this coach in with a philosophy, then you've punted him after a couple of months. You've got this stupid kind of slogan of being the best team in Asia. And this is a really fascinating case study, because Japanese football, for certainly the J-League era, hasn't really been run in this way, where you've had one club that's not only certainly has the desire to spend so much more money than someone else and wants the kind of success that they never have had or never held the station to aspire to, and they won it yesterday. And it reminds me a lot of what happened in Chinese football over the past, 5 or 6 years, where you've suddenly got this huge influx of money, and with that comes expectation. Because in business, you can do this, right? So if you're in Rakuten, and you can just go and buy up your competitors, and you can, spend on this model and that model, and boom, and everything works like that. But we all know that football is not like that. And this is particularly the problem at Kobe, because as I've said to you on previous podcasts, certainly people in and around the know at that club have put it to me quite clearly that Mr. Mikitani is not only the owner, but he's incredibly influential in making decisions in terms of who plays, in terms of what substitutions are made. Messages are being relayed from boxes down to sidelines and all this kind of thing. So it's a ginormous mess. And I think I was one of the few dissenting voices early in the season that I can see this going ass up to the point where you can forget about the dream of fighting for an ACL. And the reality of it is you're going to be fighting to avoid the drop. And I still stand by that. And the more and more confused it gets, okay, we've heard VS Boas is one name here and other names. I thought he was off driving a rally car last time I checked. So I don't know if he's the great answer to the problem either. But who knows? Is it going to be a guy that Iniesta wants to bring in? Is it going to be a guy that Podolski, if he stays, wants to bring in? Is it going to be a guy that Mikitani wants to bring in for his own vanity? And then they come in with all this pressure, and the club already is struggling, and you could imagine that they could easily be, as I said, far closer to the bottom than the top when this appointment is kind of finally made, whoever it is going to be. Because you're not going to parachute them in now, where you've got for the next 4 weeks you've got these silly cup games 1 week, and then the league and cup and league and all this kind of stuff. You want to give them kind of a little bit of clean air. So I suspect that the decision probably won't be made until the group stage of the Levain Cup is over, so you avoid that kind of confusion. Or maybe it comes in the last of those group matches, and the caretaker continues, and then they take over with a kind of a training period or something. But there's going to be huge pressure when that happens. It's just a giant mess right across the pitch. I think they look a lot better with Kim in goal, so that's certainly solved one of the problems. But is it only a temporary problem because Villa was out and Iniesta was out, so you could have afforded to do it this week? And next week, when you've got the all those kind of foreigners back, what's going to happen? Because the other thing in all this is that Wellington's actually been one of their better players. I mean, he's a maligned player, but I think he's having a fantastic season. And, you know, kind of a guy that I'm not quite sure where it's come from, but he's looked like one of their better options going forward. So, yeah, how this current caretaker juggles it, and how whoever the new guy going to be coming in juggles, you know, the interference and the influence from outside forces, and you know, all the expectations. We saw this nonsense with Podolski, you know, apparently allegedly swearing at you know, some ball boy in German, whatever. It's not a great look for the club either, nor for Mr. Podolski individually, if that indeed was the case. And we don't know if it was or if it wasn't, but it's certainly, you know, something that it's been headline news here in Japan, and probably doesn't fit with the Japanese culture, or certainly the Japanese football culture either. So there's just all these major issues going on at this club. And yeah, you kind of almost a pity whoever the new man is going to be coming in and finding himself in this situation.
Yes, it's quite the sideshow, isn't it, at the Nobu Stadium? Recent results on the pitch obviously haven't been too flash for Kobe. They've dropped their last three on the spin, and the early penalty for Kuroki, as I said earlier, was all that Reds needed here. And a lot of upheaval behind the scenes, and a lot of organisation needed by Mr. Yoshida, who, as you say, Scott, has returned to replace the man who replaced him with about 8 games to go in last season. Yoshida had to manage them for the final 12 games of 2017 after replacing Nel Senyo, and then he was in charge until match day 26 of 2018 when Lijo came in after they had lost 3 straight games then as well. So a lot to watch there at Vissel. And the foreign player situation is very interesting, because, as you say, Wellington was obviously the odd man out, or one of the odd men out, in the early going when Vija and Iniesta were fit, and even when Sergi Samper was getting himself up to fitness. But once Vija returns, you would imagine that Wellington, although he might be playing well enough to keep him out of the team on form, but you would probably, with Mr. Mikitani, as you say, pulling a lot of the strings behind the scenes, he would want Avija involved in the squad at least, of course. So that means that with Kim probably dropping out once Iniesta is back. I mean, that's a decision that looks ridiculous, because, as you say, Maekawa has really struggled. But at the end of the day, 7 into 5 just doesn't go. And I mean, what else would they do? Would they they'd have to either drop Dankler or Samper from the match day squad, Scott, and they've obviously they've just bought Samper in from Barcelona, and Dankler has, I think, he started every league game so far, so that would be a huge move to drop him out as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. So you say the ones that are locked on, the three guys that are coming in the off season, right? So Dankler, or in recent times, Dunkler, Samper and Vija, they have to be locked in as three, and then you're not dropping Podolski or Iniesta, so there's your five. So what happens? I mean, yeah, really, really, what happens? I mean, some club is going to get my boyfriend in the middle of the season, surely, right? From Kashima Racehold, and spend the money to get him. And this seems like a prime situation, doesn't it? Where you say, we'll get the best Japanese goalkeeper we can get, and we'll pay Racehold whatever they want, you know, and he's down in J2, and, you know, he might be in and out of the national team if he doesn't get himself back in J1. I mean, Can't you just see Nakamura being at Kobe in the middle of the year?
Well, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, but I mean, a lot of their personnel moves in recent times haven't, so we'll see. But Kobe, never a dull moment down there, as we've mentioned. All right, well, you've already given loads of props to Oita, Scott, as they sit fourth in the table after 8 rounds, defying everybody's expectations. They were 20 minutes away from another away win. They came into this game away at Gunma Osaka, having won all 3 of their away games thus far this season, and coincidentally they'd won them all 2-1. But obviously that streak was snapped here. Gunma came in joint bottom of the 4. form table with the Sendai, with just a one win from their last five. They did not pick up a win here, but they did ultimately pick up a point at home. And the way they've been scrapping in recent weeks, obviously any point is a decent return for them at this stage. Both of these goals had elements of fortune to them. Scott, Ado Onaiwu chesting in, I think, might be generous. He definitely had his arm raised, whether the ball struck it or not. After a bit of pinball wizard off Masaaki Higashiguchi in the 25th minute, a very odd goal. And then, with 20 minutes to go, Yasuhito Endo tried his luck from 25 yards, and the ball took a wicked deflection off Yoshinori Suzuki, completely wrong footing Shun Takagi in the Trinita net. So, not highlight reel goals, these two, but I don't know. At the end of the day, Gumba will be happy to have come from behind and taken a point, because, as I said, they've been really scrappy in recent times.
It was a strange game. I mean, the first half, outside of that that goal, there was really almost nothing at all going on. And for the first 20-25 minutes of the second half, it was completely all Gumba. I mean, they literally... This was one of the best 45-minute goalkeeping performances that I've ever seen in Japanese football from Shun Takagi. And he made, like, a bazillion, like, outstanding saves. And again, talking about one of the more impressive players of the season, because he's come in, not come in, he's been part of the system where he's forced to play, you know, he's the first line of attack. I mean, you know, a lot of short passing, all the attacks kind of start from him. So he's got that kind of pressure on him, but he's made some exceptional saves, and he was truly outstanding in this game. I mean, really save after save after save. And the one that did beat him, you know, as you said, was that one where it was a really wicked deflection, which he would have had saved if, you know, he hadn't have been wrong footed by it. So how dominant they were in, you know, most of the second half, you could almost say that Gamba probably deserved more than they got, out of it. But, after a fairly lifeless first half, both teams attacked, you know, really impressively over the second half. Gumba certainly had the better of it. And, if it wasn't for Mr. Takagi, maybe the points would have all gone to Gumba. But certainly, I don't think it's panic stations at Gumba either. I mean, they've, played fairly impressively as well. They've certainly looked a lot more settled since I've gone back to having, the two veterans there in central midfield. There's a few issues with the squad, and there's still, you know, a little bit of confusion about what happens at the back. They've lost Fujiharu, I believe, for 3 months now or so with that dislocated shoulder. He's out for quite a while, so it's going to be a blow that they have to recover from. But I think, generally speaking, they've played fairly well. I think Gumba's the same as with a team like Shimizu. I guess we'll come on to in a minute, you know, tended to have the better of possession, the better of the chances, and looked the more settled and creative in doing so. But the results just haven't gone their way. But, you know, as long as they don't panic and revert to a different kind of approach, I think, it won't be long before both of those. We've already seen it with Shimizu picking up a couple of wins in a row. But, I think it'll be long before Gumba do so as well.
All right, well, that's good to hear praise for Gumba. If only Alan Gibson was here to hear you say that, Scott, because, I don't go out of my way to catch extended highlights of Gumba games. I do check out the highlights from all of the games, but they're not a side, obviously, that I follow especially closely. So, it's interesting to hear you say that, results haven't gone their way early doors. But, yes, they're as you say, in a bit of a false position so far, and they'll be looking.
Well, there's only one club that scored more goals this season, right? That's Nagoya. So, and it's not only the goals, like they could have scored four or five in this game as well. So it's not only the goals that they have scored, which the record speaks for itself, but they've been creating bucket loads of chances in most games.
Sure. Well. Yeah, the joint second best attack, but on the flip side, not unlike Gumba at all, the joint worst defence. So comes with the territory, obviously, when it comes to Gumba. So a point apiece at the Panasonic Stadium, and I think you said your piece on Oita earlier. You've mentioned how impressive Takagi was between the sticks. Anything else to add for them? I mean, a start for Ado Onaiwu was good to see, and up alongside Noriaki Fujimoto, the joint J1 scoring leader with Diego Oliveira and Anderson Lopez. So he was off the score sheet again for the second straight week. But Yeah, it sounded like it was pretty much one-way traffic, though, with Gumba dominating the chances. Oita, well, I said Gumba would have been happy with a point, but it sounds from what you said is that Oita will have definitely gone home satisfied with theirs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, fairly lifeless first half. I mean, it was pretty much mostly Gumba, you know, with the big kind of chances over the second. And, yeah, I think absolutely if there was a team that deserved to win it, it was Gumba. But this, again, shows the fact that, you know, Oita are even away from home and not afraid to come out and play positively. And it's that mentality. We look at the squad, I mean, it's a collection of no-names, right? I mean, like, really, how many... outside of the players that are scoring the goals, how many players can you name in this Oita team without looking at them?
Well, obviously, Kaoru Takayama, but, that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that sums it up. I mean, really, it's a collection of nobody. So to do what they've done, you know, is an absolute fantastic credit to the players and the staff, but I think particularly, you know, to Mr. Kanonasaka, who's come in and set this approach and mentality, and such a great lesson to, you know, all promoted clubs and all clubs with, you know, middling kind of budgets.
So this is something that we see a lot in J2, Scott, and I know J1 and J2 are very different beasts, but, I mean, we often see not necessarily promoted clubs, but, you know, unfashionable teams kind of come out of nowhere and start hot and then ultimately fade away. I mean, the current J2 leaders of Mito Hollyhock are still top of the table, nobody saw that coming, and most experts will probably expect them to gradually slide down the table and end up mid-table, which is where Mito always finish. So, I mean, from what you've seen from Oita so far, I mean, they should be aiming to win the title because they're fourth after 8 games. But, I mean, is that really realistic? I mean, are they likely to be, well, not even found out, but, I mean, you've mentioned how limited the squad is. So, I mean, are these results, positive results, going to dry up, and are they ultimately going to slide down to mid-table and lower? Because surely, if you're not rating this squad at all, then how sustainable is this?
Because, I think it's not so much a question of not rating the squad, but very much so rating the coach. And as we've seen time and time again, that if you have the right coach with the right philosophy and the right mentality, they can make limited players play far beyond their station. But, it's not often, you know, the case the other way. If you have a rubbish coach but decent players, you know, the results are not necessarily going to come. So, I mean, if you have average players but a good coach, really the elevation that you can do it's just not even about tactically how they're set up or how they're playing, but I think it's as much about the mentality. And I don't know, because I haven't been around a team and I've never spoken to the coach, but there's obviously something about him, right? I mean, he's led them to, you know, successive promotions from J3 all the way up to the verge of the ACL spots within 5 years. So there's clearly something about this guy. I mean, I'd love to, you know, get a chance hopefully at some point this year to sit down with him and talk to him, you know, or some other people around the club, because we've seen it so many times with Japanese football that it's really a game of mentality. And if you can convince, these players that they are where they deserve to be, and he's obviously been able to do it because he's got them out of J3, he's got them out of J2, and now he's got them in this case in J1, right? So what's the common thread? Because it was a mass turnover of the squad this year, again, as has been in previous years. So the real constant throughout that time has been this one guy running, coaching the team. So can it turn? I think there's no reason to say why it can't continue. If it's already been built to this point, and it's been built as far as we can see on the back of, you know, one really dominant figure who's constructed the team in this manner to play the way that he wants. But it's easy to do that on, you know, on the training pitch or whatever, but then to come and consistently do it in games, you know, where you should be overawed, because a lot of these players haven't really much at all the J1 experience. The coaches don't have any J1 experience. So, you know, going away to these places, hosting big clubs at home, you should be overawed and you should have this mentality that we've seen Matsumoto and other teams have. But the fact that they haven't done that to this point gives me absolutely complete confidence that that they should be able to push on and do it. And as I said earlier on, if you're then in the point, you know, where you think, you know, geez, okay, maybe the title, not that we can make a real push for ACL or something in the middle of the year, then why, you know, it's pretty an easy sell to go to whoever controls the money and say, you know, give us a few kind of key players to strengthen the squad. Maybe that's what he doesn't want to do. I mean, the other thing that we need to point out of this, I haven't gone through and looked at all the teams, but I'd be surprised. They're probably one of the only clubs to be playing without a foreigner. as well. I mean, it's an entirely Japanese-based team. So maybe they don't. I mean, they had the Taiga Titipan, who's picked up a knock, and he's been in and out of the starting side, the side for the last month or so. But predominantly, they played with 11 Japanese players, which is an extremely unusual thing. 11 Japanese players, a Japanese coach, and it's really, really working. So I see absolutely no reason at all why it should drop off. And, you know, if they can get a couple of additions to really bolster them mid-season, it could get even better.
All right, then. Well, yeah, long may it continue. I mean, it is a terrific story. It's arguably the story of the first couple of months of the J1 season. So, it's a long, hard grind, this J1 season, and we'll wait and see if Oita have the staying power. But, yeah, so far they've been absolutely terrific. And as we've said in recent weeks, they're very much up in the top four on merit. So, yes, as I say, good luck to Trinita. All right, we have one game left to review, Scott, and there's a very much a good and a bad side to this game. The good side is that the Shimizu carried on the good times themselves after claiming their first victory of the season last week in the Shizuoka Derby away, in inverted commas, at Ikopa against Iwata. I say first victory of the season, the first league win of the season, of course, because they had also beaten the same club, Iwata, at home in a Levain Cup match. So both of Espolsa's wins before Saturday had come against Iwata, which will have given their supporters massive amounts of a cheer, I'm sure. But yes, they had so much fun winning for the first time in the league last week that they doubled their fun at winning at home 1-0 over Cerezo Osaka. And that's the bad news of this game, is that I'm very close to making a vow on this podcast, Scott, that I won't waste any energy talking about Cerezo Osaka, because they are the most frustrating side to cover on a week-to-week basis. They are just unbelievably, well, they're not even inconsistent anymore. They're just absolutely rubbish on a week-to-week basis. And, it took a remarkable goal from Koya Kitagawa in the 82nd minute to win this game. But, Cerezo are just nowhere. And, I just can't be bothered, Scott.
Yeah, and imagine if you took, the fantastic midfielder Souza out of this team as well. I mean, he was kind of a one-man team in this. I mean, you know, he's not afraid to shoot from distance, but he had three or four kind of efforts. He had a few, you know, free kicks that had sailed just wide as well. I mean, if you took him out, really, they offered almost little to no attacking threat. I mean, mind you, Shimizu didn't look much better either. And, you know, the sooner that they can get Douglas back into the starting lineup, the quicker they will be. Of course, they lost young Ishige in training. I think he did his ACL leading up to this match. All the players were parading around, with his number and his picture on the front of the shirt at full time in a tribute to him and the backup player Keta Nakamura, who came in the off-season, was also out as well. So they were forced into a bit of a reshuffle at, the central midfielder Kawhi playing the left. So I don't think they particularly looked especially impressive either in this game, Shimizu, compared to how they have in previous games. But yeah, really a very unusual kind of goal. This kind of punted ball. And I, what the hell was Kim doing, the goalkeeper? Right? He was just, he kind of come out, to make this clearance and then stopped and hung about and then started to go again. And, Kitagawa was almost managed to muck it up anyway. It was a bit of a mess, kind of like the game overall. But I agree with you. And Cerezo, this is another case where you've got this coach that's come in and as far as we know, been given a mandate to try and change the way that the team has played. And look at the individuals in this team. That should be one of the better teams in the league, right? I mean, a fantastic keeper, good defenders, excellent midfield. Souls is one of the better players in the league. And then, I'm not a massive fan for Tokura, but I know you are. But then the two guys in behind, this kind of a front three, they're playing with the two number 10s with Kakitani and Kiyotake Sugawara. They're two of the, the better players in the league as well. And Jonjic, the Croatian defender, all the things, a fantastic player. So, I mean, this is really an ACL kind of squad. But, again, they look really uncertain what they are. I mean, are they, the kind of team that they were for last season, counter-attacking, kind of reactive team, or are they the team that they want to be under Latino in terms of, more setting the tempo and rhythm of games? And it's not working either way particularly well at the moment. Again, you have to wonder, the same kind of situation we're facing with Tulsa down in the south, just how long he's going to be given as well, because I don't know, maybe these clubs, they, you know, when you've been one way for so long, you need to take a little bit of a modest step to getting where you want him to be, instead of all, you know, trying to flick the switch and turn it all around completely in one season. And in both of those cases, it just doesn't, yeah, seem to be working.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, yeah, credit to Shimizu and Koya Kitagawa for scoring that that goal. Try and catch it on the highlights if you can. It's a yeah, it's just a remarkable thing from start to finish. I mean, Yuji Rokutan's ball, his kick out of his box is absolutely terrific into the path of El Senio. But then, yes, as you say, Scott, as Kim Jin-hyun races out of his box for no apparent reason, well, that's when the fun really started. So, yeah, try and catch that highlight if you can, listeners. And that wraps up the J1 Match Day 8 slate, Scott. A little bit of housekeeping. You've mentioned a couple of the ECL games coming up this midweek, in particular Kawasaki hosting Ulsan and Hiroshima travelling to Daegu. Well, yes, it is the J-League versus the K-League Part 2 in ACL group stage at match day 4. Those two games we mentioned both take place on Tuesday night, and then on Wednesday, Urawa head to Junbuk and Kashima host Gyeongnam. So, yeah, I think all four of the Japanese clubs are still in reasonable shape to make the knockout stage. Scott, you would obviously know far more about that than I do, but yeah, with three group stage games are still to play, obviously, I imagine it's all still to play for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's probably a few clubs that can't afford, you know, to lose, particularly the tiebreakers being a head-to-head result, you know, after a couple of those losses last time. So Kawasaki really needs to win at home this weekend. Mid-week, as is probably the case as well for Reds. They're in a very tricky group. But, yeah, I mean, there's no teams that are out of it at this stage. It'd be fantastic to see at least three clubs get through and Hiroshima stay at home to focus on the round of 64 or whatever our stage right at the Louvain Cup.
All right then. Okay, yeah, so that's coming up in that midweek ACL group stage match day 4. And, yeah, so once again, apologies to J2 fans. I did mention ever so briefly, though, that, yeah, Mito Hollyhock are atop of the pile after 10 rounds. But, yeah, fear not, J2 watchers. I'm in the preliminary negotiations to get the next J2 special with you next week on next week's episode of the podcast. So keep your eyes and ears open for that. But, yes, in the meantime, I'm sure you'll cope without a brief J2 update. So, Scott, that is just about it for this week's episode. And I believe we've kept it under 2 hours. So very well done on your behalf there. Before we go, though, to anything to plug, is there a new Asian game podcaster coming soon?
There will be. We've just been a little bit slack in getting around to it. But, yeah, there will be one out in hopefully a week or so once I get my myself into
all right,
gear.
Terrific stuff. I did mention obviously that Nagoya Hiroshima is the headline match from J1 Match Day 9. Yes, if you're interested in the other fixtures, you know where to find them. So Scott, we will leave it there. Thank you ever so much for your time again. Always a great chatting, and yeah, look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, enjoy your holidays.
Thank you very much. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Scott McIntyre and, of course, to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week with the April J2 special. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
It's literally the changing of an era. The cake of class.
The cake of class. That's a new one. I like that.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.